I think at this point, even the most casual news consumer has run across a lot of stories like this.
The focus of the European debt crisis move today.
Time is running out. Here's what would happen if the Eurozone fails.
Tomorrow, there'll be a unified statement of support for these European countries to come up with this
debt crisis ongoing in Europe, setting the stage for investing in...
Well, so I am joined now here in the studio with somebody who actually understands economics and knows about this kind of thing, Alex Bloomberg of the Planet Money team and our staff. Hi, Alex.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Alex... I think I speak for all Americans when I ask you this question, and that is, do I have to care about this?
I am so glad you asked. I'm so glad you asked that question, because we at Planet Money have been obsessed with Europe for the last couple of
years. Yes or no?
The short answer is yes, you have to care. It's going to affect your life in some way. It might actually even cause the global economy to collapse, in which case you'll really want to know the story. But even if that doesn't happen,
right,
it is just a fascinating tale. You know, you hear a report on the news, it's all interest rates, blah, 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 you know, European leaders, blah, blah, blah. But underneath all that, there is passion, drama, soaring hopes, crushed dreams. It's all there hidden in the news that you're hearing.
Really?
You don't need to care. You want to care.
Well, that's very good news, because we have set aside the entire hour of the program today for you to tell that story from WBEZ Chicago. It's This American Life, distributed by Public Radio International. So, Alex, I'm just going to hand the show over to you.
All right. And I say, like, from WBEZ Chicago, that thing?
No, I just said that.
So I don't have to say that.
No, no. You can just proceed. Have you heard the show before?
No, you didn't. We just said today's program.
All right, you can say today's program.
All right. Today's program, Continental Breakup. This hour, we're going to hear the surprising, dramatic story behind the crisis currently unfolding in Europe. I'm sorry. Do I say stay with us? You say stay with us. You say stay with us at some point before you go.
I say it right there.
Okay.
So say it. Say it.
Stay with us. Act 1, Currency of Dreams. The story of the crisis in Europe is really the story of the euro, that currency that almost all the countries in Europe share. But think about that for a second. Why did they ever do that? All these different countries with all these different cultures all deciding to share a currency. Imagine if the United States, if Mexico and Canada all agreed, hey, you know what? We're going to get rid of our own money and start a new money that we'll all share. Think about all the meetings that you'd have to have, all the coordination. And for what? We have our own money now. It works fine. Why would we ever do that? Various Planet Money reporters have been making trips to Europe all year, and you're going to be hearing from them over the course of this hour. Planet Money's Hannah Jaffe Walt will be telling the bulk of the story. And we're going to start at the beginning. We spent a lot of time talking to all sorts of people who were present at the creation of the euro, who dreamed and worked for years, decades, to make it happen. Planet Money's Hannah Jaffe Walt and our colleague Zoe Chase tell the story of why they wanted it to happen and what they chose to ignore along the way.
History takes a long time to unfold in Europe. And the euro was that way. There were no euro coins or bills until 2002, but the dream of the euro had been around for 150 years.
But that's all it was, a dream, the territory of artists, intellectuals, poets.
Yeah, Zoe, read that thing from Victor Hugo, one of the very first calls for a united Europe.
Okay, Victor Hugo, you know, Les Mis, Hunchback of Notre Dame. Here's an excerpt from a speech he gave in 1871. And keep in mind, the actual Europe at this time is fighting a brutal war, tearing itself to pieces. Okay, here it is. And we shall hear France cry out, "It's my turn, Germany. Here I am. Am I your enemy? No, I am your sister." And then he goes on to say, "Let us be the same republic. Let us be the United States of Europe. Let us be the Continental Federation. Let us be European liberty. Let us be universal peace."
It's nice, right?
Yes.
So I keep thinking that the euro for all these years is kind of like Esperanto. You remember Esperanto, the international language? It'd be really easy to learn. We'd all pick it up and speak one tongue across borders, and then there'd be international peace and understanding. The dream of the euro was kind of like that.
But let me ask you, do you speak Esperanto today? No. Do nearly 332 million people carry euros in their pockets? Yes. So what happened?
World War II was, you know, such a such a catastrophe.
This is Pascal Lamy, the right-hand man to the father of the euro, Jacques Delors. Delors is old now. He's too old to give interviews. But Lamy was there at the key turning point when the euro stopped being a quixotic dream and started looking like a real necessity.
It's just after the Second World War that the notion of integrating Europe politically became a serious political idea. Before that, it had been, you know, dreams.
But after World War II, it was being talked about in two of Europe's most powerful nations. In France, by people like Lamy, who went on to head the World Trade Organization, and in Germany, by people like Helmut Schlesinger, former president of the German Central Bank.
One cannot forget that the whole strength of having a European Union is based on the fact that we never want to have war between our countries, which we have had so much and so terrible.
Germany no longer wanted to dominate Europe. It wanted the opposite, actually. It wanted to be a team player, a peacemaker. Germany wanted to be the nicest guy at the European table.
Of course, France didn't want Germany to dominate either. Germany would always be bigger, more powerful. So France wanted to link its economy to the German economy. That way, Germany's strength would be France's strength.
And also, a united Europe would be big enough and rich enough to become the world's other superpower and rival the United States, which both countries liked. All this was making a once poetic dream much more appealing.
But of course, there were problems. Two main problems. One German, one French. For the Germans, the whole sharing a currency thing made them very nervous. They worried it would lead to inflation.
And Germans are really scared of inflation. It calls up a bad memory, the hyperinflation of the 1920s, the worst bout of hyperinflation in recent history. You may have heard about Germans carting their money around in wheelbarrows or using worthless German marks to wallpaper their homes. Many people in Germany feel like it was this experience that opened the door for the Nazis to come to power.
I was reporting on the euro crisis in Berlin a couple months ago, and it shocked me how readily Germans would bring up the hyperinflation of the 20s when talking about their problems today. Klaus Frankenberger is an editor at the German newspaper, the FAZ.
I mean, Germany is always a stability mind, as you know. No? Order, stability, that's part of our collective DNA, I would say. But these historical experiences tell every policymaker, you don't mess around with inflation. Never. You don't do this.
So Germany's position in the decades-long conversation that led to the euro was this. If Europe wants to have a single currency, then we can't have all these separate governments out there. We need to become what Victor Hugo dreamed of, a United States of Europe. But the Germans wanted this not for poetry, but to keep inflation in check. They wanted an overarching authority that can say to individual countries, here is how to run your economy.
Can you imagine France no longer its own country, but a member state in a united federation of Europe? Yeah, the French couldn't either. Again, here's Pascal Lamy.
The French like Europe if Europe is a big France. It's something that they drive, something that doesn't bite too much into the French sovereignty. It took 30 years of discussion.
So for 30 years, the French and the German were saying to each other, the Germans were saying, well, what about our Deutschmark? And the French were saying, well, what about our national
exactly
identity?
If they were not always saying this, because diplomats and governments don't always say what they have in mind, but that's what they had in mind.
And it could have gone on like this, haggling back and forth over these issues, until this happened.
From the Berlin Wall, take a look at them. They've been there since last night. They are here in the thousands. They are here in the tens of thousands. Occasionally they shout, Die Mauer muss weg, the wall must go.
In 1989, the wall separating East and West Germany was about to fall, and the Germans wanted French support for their reunification. The rest of Europe was still a bit wary of Germany. When you plunge the world into one of the bloodiest wars in history, it's kind of hard to live that down. And here, Germany was about to grow even larger. So France said, okay, you can have our support if we all go on the euro.
And the French got their way. There would be a common currency, but no United States of Europe, as the Germans wanted.
What the Germans got were promises. Promises that all the countries that used the same money would play by German rules. They would guard against inflation. If a country wanted in on this common currency, the euro, they would have to borrow responsibly, be careful about their deficits. In other words, to use the euro, the rest of Europe would need to make itself more German. The rest of Europe seemed very happy to do just that, even if for many countries in Europe, becoming more German was a completely unrealistic dream. Nowhere more unrealistic than in Greece.
Our inflation rate was much higher than what was accepted. Our budget deficit was much higher than what was accepted.
This is Lucas Soukalos with the Hellenic Foundation for European and Foreign Policy in Athens.
If you asked somebody in Europe whether Greece would join in the Eurozone, and you asked that question, let's say, in early, mid-1990s, the answer would have been, you're mad. Because, I mean, all Greek indicators were far off. No chance in your lifetime. When the European Statistical Service produced graphs of which showed all the different countries in terms of inflation rates, in terms of interest rates, very often Greece appeared in an insert because it couldn't fit in the graph. Right? Because if your inflation rate is 20, it doesn't fit in a normal graph. So you either have a big graph but it doesn't show anything, or you have a reasonable graph and then you have inserts. But Greece
is over here.
Yeah, but Greece was not the only country, but it was one of the worst, and usually the worst.
Still, Greece began a national campaign to make it in.